The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now to Gaza, where the United States and Israel have withdrawn from the ceasefire talks, accusing Hamas of not acting in good faith. Meanwhile, France has announced plans to officially recognize Palestine as a state. Despite the devastation in Gaza, the Israeli government continues to reject responsibility for the man-made famine. Just yesterday, far-right Israeli government minister Amichai Eliyahu said in an interview that Israel has no obligation to address hunger in the territory, even going so far as to say that the government aims to expel the population and that no nation feeds its enemies. He concluded with a chilling remark suggesting that the government is pushing towards Gaza being wiped out.
The Minister of Heritage for Israel, Amichai Eliyahu, said in an interview that the government is racing to have Gaza wiped out. In the meantime, thank God we are wiping out this evil and wiping out the population that was educated on Mein Kampf.
Now, joining us, journalist Paul Kearns, who's based in Tel Aviv. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Pat.
A number of developments. Obviously, overnight we had the delegations to the peace talks from the United States and Israel going home, being pulled out of those talks. And you have France deciding that it will recognize Palestinian statehood.
Yeah, that's right. The negotiations seem to have stalled. There's a view here that increased international criticism of Israel's actions, the defense forces, and the horrific imagery from Gaza is encouraging Hamas to adopt a more inflexible approach to the negotiations. That's the view in Israel. The reporting is a little vague, but there appears to be about four sticking points. The first is the extent to which Israeli forces will withdraw from the Strip during the first phase. Guarantees that the Americans can give to Hamas that the war will come to a complete end at some point. And Hamas wants to see the American Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, who's responsible for the food distribution, out of the picture, as I'm sure many, many people internationally do also. And apparently Hamas is demanding a larger number of prisoners to be released.
And these are negotiating points, but the question of the withdrawal by the Israelis and by the Americans from these talks, is that also seen as strategic? Like the talks are over, end of, we're going home because you guys are too demanding. I mean, this is what negotiation looks like, I suppose.
Well, I can't speak, obviously, personally for what was in the mind of the negotiators to stop. But, I negotiations stop and start like this, or have been going on like this for months.
You see, the effect of all of this, the cessation of any kind of peace talks at the moment, means that the killing of people queuing for food, that the starvation of people, which could be avoided very easily, continues, that people are dying, there's malnutrition, there's now sickness and disease, and so on. This continues, and that is the weapon that the Israelis and the Americans are holding over Hamas, while Hamas are looking for those guarantees, perhaps, which will never be given by Israel, to get out of Gaza.
That's all true. I mean, there's a cynical view that the horrific imagery from Gaza, as I said, serves Hamas' interest, and that it puts increasing pressure, as we see internationally, perhaps not to much avail, for Israel to organize better the food distribution and cease the daily bombings and killings.
So what are ordinary Israelis seeing on their television screens or online? Because, I mean, the messages are coming from international sources, which are available to ordinary Israelis every time they open their laptop. How are they responding to the imagery they are seeing?
Well, it's a complex picture. I mean, it's important to stress to your listeners, Pat, there's no one voice in Israeli media. Haaretz, the left of center paper of record, reports everything and shows everything as highly critical of the government. But the mainstream TV channels, three of them, one state, two private, have always refused to show the full truth of what's going on. They are, however, talking about it more now. Perhaps it's forced upon them. 2 days ago, one of the private channels reported on what the international media was reporting. So that gave them a kind of a way out, so to speak, to not be reporting the fact as news, but what the international reporting was showing. But they made fuzzy all the harrowing imagery that the rest of the world sees daily. But last night, there was a shift. There was actually the state channel who showed, for the first time I recall, the horrific images of emaciated children, etc., on the TV. But for the other two channels, it didn't make the top five news stories. And all of them, I have to say, presented the facts in terms of or interpreted the issue of food distribution along the government's line, that the government is providing food distribution, and it's tied up at the border, and there's disputed reasons why it's tied up at the border.
Now, what is happening though in terms of international opinion? Obviously, when you see articles online by respected journalists, talking about the Warsaw Ghetto, reminding Israelis of what happened to many of their ancestors in terms of the way the Nazis treated them, and even showing images of little children, little Jewish children of that time, side by side with pictures of little Palestinians of similar age with distended bellies and skeletal-like limbs, and just putting it out there, the comparisons are almost unavoidable.
They are, and I've seen those imagery, on social media. As I said, the mainstream TV channels would not show such imagery, but there is a different discourse on social media. People I notice, friends or acquaintances, etc., are now sharing quite graphic imagery in a way that I have never seen before, certainly in the last 2 years of war. And there's also a small, and I have to stress that it's small, but growing demonstrations in Tel Aviv showing the images of emaciated children and photographs of Palestinian children who've been killed over the past 20 months. And that's growing.
Now, do you have, a summary of Israeli reaction in percentages? For example, you say that on the hard left, there would be those who believe Israel itself is committing a genocide. What about the rest of public opinion?
It's hard to put exact numbers, but, there would be a minority, and it's a small minority, I have to say, that would recognize that genocide is taking place, and that wouldn't be disputed. The ex-prime minister Olmert, talked about war crimes and concentration camps. I think for the vast majority of Israelis, and again, it's hard to put numbers, but you'd be talking 50%, 60%, 70%. They're just looking the other way. They're refusing to acknowledge the reality, and as I say, it doesn't help that the mainstream television channels, which is the filter of news for them, doesn't show it. There is a small minority on the far right, and the minister, Amichai Eliyahu, probably expressed the opinions of those who are, it's hard to say, delighted or
I mean, the attitude is, let's wipe out the Palestinians in Gaza, let them die. They started it tough. So if this is the result, we're not going to feed our enemies. What nation ever battling an enemy ever goes out to feed them? But the point is that there are lots of people who want to feed the Palestinians, and they're being prevented from so doing by Israel. It's not that anyone wants Israel to start exporting the stock on its supermarket shelves to Gaza. But there are many nations and many organizations around the world who are perfectly prepared, happy, willing, anxious to get in there and feed the Palestinians who are starving.
Of course. And there continues to be disputes about, the nature of the distribution of the aid. Apparently there's evidence of, quite large stocks of aid supplies just lying inside the Gaza border that the UN is claiming Israel's security and bureaucratic requirements are making it impossible to access. Israel is making counterclaims that Hamas is complicating the distribution of those products or goods and trying to take control. What is not, I guess, in dispute is the extent of the horror and the extent of, the risk of widespread starvation and the images of emaciated children. You do get, however, on, extreme social media comments who deny this and who say the images are fake, etc. But that's kind of on the margins, I think.
Now, I'm not sure how much traction that American podcast that got this week, where the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu went on a full rant about hamburgers and preferring Burger King while the people of Gaza are starving. I mean, at best, it's utterly tone deaf. But let's have a listen to that clip.
Burger King. I like Burger King more.
What's your go-to at McDonald's?
No, I'll tell you, Burger King. We did the, the double,
Whopper?
The
I haven't ripped Burger King in a long time.
Burger King kind of sucks.
Yeah.
No,
The BK Lounge can hit it.
I disagree completely.
You like Burger King over McDonald's?
That's your worst take, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's a crazy take.
No, that was fine. I mean, I like Burger King. The answer is yes. And we'd go and have Burger King. And guess what happened? So I opened up the Israeli economy, right? And what do you think we had? McDonald's, Burger King's, burger that, burger this. And the bloom went off the rose. And how did I know? Because we'd go for the French, we'd go for the lot, you know, the shakes, the French fries.
That's kind of tone deaf in extreme. Now, the timing of it and all of that may be unfortunate from his point of view, but really it's quite disturbing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly not defending Netanyahu in those comments, but it's odd, and it's, you know, for a master of communication, it's a peculiar thing to have fallen into. I have to say that whole story I didn't pick up in the Israeli media at all. I did notice that American media, and there was a backlash from actually Trump or right-wing supporters to the interview. I mean, the headlines here every day are the nature of the Hamas deal, the fate of the hostages. There was a terror attack in central Israel yesterday. Internal political stories, potential fall of the government, and obviously everything about Gaza. So it's always a busy news day, and I don't think Netanyahu's discussion about burgers quite made it there.
Text here. The Germans claimed they didn't know what was going on in the camps, but they didn't have social media and mobile phones at that time. Of course the Israelis know what's happening in Gaza. What say you, Paul?
You know, our social media feed reflects our interests, and we get back what we look up. So mm-hmm. Israelis perhaps are getting back, a distorted or a particular Israeli view of what's happening. That's absolutely true. You know, there's no media censorship here. Everything is available, and you can go online in 10 seconds and see everything that the rest of the world sees. I think it's incredibly interesting why Israelis refuse to do that or choose not to do that, and also why the mainstream TV channels, which are not censored, it's the journalist's responsibility. I mean, some of the biggest names in the news shows here, such as Yonit Levy's Channel 12 news program, who ironically co-hosts a podcast with Jonathan Friedland of The Guardian, has refused to show or discuss the horror of that imagery that Irish people see every day and every night. So it's an analysis of the psychology of people as to why maybe perhaps it's understandable you look away, you want to look away, knowing that...
Many people, by the way, Paul, in Ireland say, I can't stand looking at the news because I don't want to see this stuff. You know, that's in Ireland, Irish people disturbed by it, so disturbed that they don't want to see it anymore.
Well, I read in the newspaper here as the demonstration was walking down the street and they were showing pretty graphic images and horrific images in Tel Aviv. They said they encountered people who were coming out of shops and saying, what's this about? And they were explaining. And people, incredulously, for Irish listeners, said, oh, I didn't know that was happening. I believe people when they say that. I think the real story is why they choose to look away and why the mainstream television channels are refusing to show the reality.
Paul, thank you very much for joining us. Paul Kearns is an Irish-born journalist based in Tel Aviv. Thank you very much for joining us. Now, some of the comments coming in. Netanyahu and Trump alone are responsible for any current alleged worldwide resurgence in anti-Semitism. Neither one has ever explained to the mainstream media how Palestinian children and babies are a security threat to Israel. So the world wonders angrily how Israel thinks it's able to give itself a free pass in Gaza. That's from Cahal in Balbriggan. Hamas having hostages as insurance hasn't stopped Israel obliterating Gaza. Why don't they just release them? That's according to John. Last night on Sky with Yelda Hakim, a UK doctor, said young boys he operated on, age 10, 13, 14, on different days had different injuries, i.e. one day shot in the head, next day abdominal, next day testicles. He believed it was like a game for the IDF. Absolutely shocking. Well, as we continue to watch and hear about the children starving in Gaza and no aid getting into that territory, the United States is to destroy almost 500 metric tons of energy-dense biscuits that expired this month. The biscuits, which have been left mouldering in storage following the shutdown of USAID, had been reported as likely to expire shortly. That was back in May the report came through, so use it or lose it kind of thing. They were not saved or sent anywhere. The Deputy Secretary for Management and Resources, a man called Michael Regas, was before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, where Senator Tim Kaine started by asking him this.
Mr. Regas, you're the Deputy Secretary for Management and Resources. These are resources that were purchased with U.S. taxpayer dollars They're specifically designed to save the lives of starving children. Why is it a good use of resources to not distribute that food to kids and instead burn it?
Thank you for the question, Senator. I'd have to look into that particular issue and see how those foodstuffs got there and why
I just interrupt for a second? I asked this question at a hearing yesterday, so you would be prepared to know that I would ask it today. And we called your office to tell you that I would ask it today. So the notion that you need to look into it strikes me as a little bit odd. As you sit here today, is that food being distributed to kids or is it being incinerated?
If it's been expired, my understanding is it's the policy of the government to not distribute expired food or medicine.
Then why has the State Department decided to burn it rather than distribute it to starving children?
Yeah, I don't have a good answer for that question, Senator. I am as distressed about that as you are.
How about this? Just as a statement of proposition, if the U.S. uses taxpayer dollars to buy specialty foods for starving children, I think it's better that the food be distributed to starving children rather than incinerated. You would agree with
that? I completely agree with that. Yeah, I think this was just a casualty of the
I have a hard time. I view it as an intentional thing because if we suddenly woke up in July, oh gosh, the expiration date is today.
Yeah.
You know, that would be one thing. But in March, there was a request by the World Food Program and others, look, if you're not going to distribute it, maybe you've decided the U.S. that starving kids are no longer your thing. But you have this asset. If you're not going to distribute it, we'll distribute it.
Yeah.
So it's not a mistake if you've been on notice of it for 2 months and you've made the decision to keep the warehouse locked and allow this food to be destroyed rather than feed at least 27,000 acutely malnourished children for a month. Yeah. Hey, you went to Boston University. Who is the most famous BU alum?
The most famous BU alum?
Next to you.
I don't know. I don't want to offend anyone that's graduated from BU. But
I'll tell you who it is.
Okay.
Martin Luther King Jr. What do you think Martin Luther King Jr. would say about a nation that purchased food for starving kids and then locked it in a warehouse until it expired and incinerated it rather than giving it out so that 27,000 starving kids could survive meagerly for one more month?
So that question asked of Michael Regas, the Deputy Secretary for Management and Resources, what would Martin Luther King Jr. Say to all of that? Well, in his Nobel Peace Prize lecture, Martin Luther King Jr. had this to say.
Today, therefore, the question on the agenda must read, why should there be hunger and privation in any land, in any city, at any table, when man has the resources and the scientific know-how to provide all mankind with the basic necessities of life? Even deserts can be irrigated and topsoil can be replaced. We cannot complain of a lack of land, for there are 25 million square miles of tillable land, of which we are using less than 7 million. We have amazing knowledge of vitamins, nutrition, the chemistry of food, and the versatility of atoms. That is no deficit in human resources. The deficit is in human will.
And that was Martin Luther King Jr. Talking about feeding those who need feeding. We will continue our...
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
On News Talk.